It was 50 years ago today that the Beatles gave their final performance on a rooftop in London, January 30th, 1969. Here it is, January 30th, 2019, and this is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Herlock, and on today's show, we talk to the Commissioner of the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets, Richard Ball. He's thoughtful and well-informed, and he's got interesting things to say about the industrial hemp program in New York State, including the recently announced Canopy Growth Hemp Processing Center. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk about a few things. First, this podcast was featured on the evening news last night. Yeah, yesterday I was visited by Caitlin Smith and Andy Manifold from WGAL-TV, Central Pennsylvania's NBC affiliate. And they did a story on the podcast. I'll put a link to that clip on the webpage for this episode, in case you want to see me behind the scenes interviewing Commissioner Ball. So in preparing for my big TV appearance, I thought a lot about what the goal of this podcast is and what I've learned in the process of making it. Now, I am a writer by nature, and I do my best thinking when writing down my thoughts. And so with your permission, I'm going to read a little bit of what I wrote. It was helpful to put it in perspective. Here goes. For over 60 years, Lancaster Farming Newspaper has been a trusted source of information for farmers in Lancaster County, throughout Pennsylvania, and the surrounding states. Farmers trust us to bring them the news and information that they need to run their businesses and sustain their livelihoods. And lately, there's been a lot of bad news in farming. The dairy industry, the trade war with China, spotted lanternfly, all that stuff. The overall ag economy is in a slump. But running parallel to all that is this positive story about industrial hemp making its comeback, with full support from Republicans and Democrats, from all types of people. It's a way forward for agriculture. Will it be the saving grace of the dairy industry? Can it solve the dairy crisis? Maybe. How about the climate crisis? Yeah, quite possibly. Check out our interview with Bruce Dietzen, the guy who built the car out of hemp. Anyway, to me, farming has always been the most important job anybody can have, simply because farmers grow the food that keeps us all alive. And now here's this other important job to add to their list, saving the planet. Farmers can and will save the world, in my opinion. And that's what this podcast is really about, giving the farmers the information that they need to grow a successful crop. I've talked to hemp farmers, university scientists, government policymakers, lawyers, lobbyists, historians, inventors, CBD makers, all kinds of people involved in the hemp industry. There are certain questions that I ask everybody. What can farmers be doing now to prepare for this crop, and how can farmers avoid getting the short end of the stick? The answers are almost always universally, farmers need to educate themselves, they need to organize, and they need to take it slow. This is not something to rush into. No one should go out and plant 1,000 acres right out of the gate. Start slow, figure it out, but get on board. Now, because this crop has been out of production for so long, a lot of the knowledge about growing the crop has been lost to time. But there are so many smart and dedicated people working towards bringing the crop back into full production. Here in southeastern Pennsylvania, Lancaster County especially, hemp was an important crop for hundreds of years. Ben Franklin and George Washington each acknowledged the excellent crop that was coming out of Lancaster County in the 1700s and were poised now to be the epicenter of hemp production again. The big question from farmers, apart from how do I grow it, is where's the market? If I grow it, who's going to buy it? And that's a real concern. We talk a lot about this on the podcast. The market is small now, but it's growing. And pretty soon, you'll see a shift in consumer demands. People, probably those millennials you hear about, they will demand that the stuff that we buy is made from sustainable, carbon-negative material. And the most versatile crop around is industrial hemp. And now that the state has thrown the doors open wide to commercial growing by lifting the acreage cap and allowing unlimited growing permits, you're going to see industry setting up shop. I wouldn't be surprised if a big hemp processing company were to build a processing plant here in Lancaster or nearby, like the one that was just announced in New York State by the Canadian company called Canopy Growth. So right now, a lot of the money and hype in industrial hemp is about CBD, which brings a lot of relief to a lot of people. But once the consumer demands shift, you're going to see a major industry growing up around the hemp fiber, and there's going to be a lot of money to be made. The other question I ask is if the marijuana stigma matters anymore. The answer there is a little trickier, but it mostly leans towards no. It doesn't really matter. The pros outweigh the cons considerably. But again, the key here is education. So at Lancaster Farming and our parent company, Steinman Communications, which also owns Lancaster Newspapers, LNP, our mission is to educate our readers and our listeners, which is why we're dedicated to producing this podcast to help farmers figure out industrial hemp. Okay, thanks for indulging me there. The second thing I want to talk about today before jumping into the interview with the commissioner is the news coming out of Louisville, Kentucky on Monday. The Courier-Journal reports that Jen Canna, in collaboration with the University of Kentucky, has developed a hemp variety with zero THC. Is that a game changer for industrial hemp? Possibly. Think of the money that states would save if they didn't have to test all the hemp for THC. The story goes on to say that Jen Canna plans to patent this plant material. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Yes, it's their right to protect their intellectual property, but I'm not sure it would be good for farmers in the long run. Great for Jen Canna, but is it bad for farmers? I'm starting to see the stick that farmers might get the short end of. Anyway, that's a topic for another episode of the podcast. And if you're listening and have an opinion about this, I'd love to hear from you. So email me at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Okay, we'll take a quick break and then we'll jump right into our conversation with Commissioner Ball. Hey, listeners. If you're not a current subscriber to Lancaster Farming Newspaper, now's your chance. We have a special deal for you. Just go to lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal for a discounted offer on the number one agricultural newspaper in the Mid-Atlantic region. So check it out, lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal. Okay, back to the show.
So good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing okay. So welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. I wonder if you could introduce yourself for us.
Sure. This is Richard Ball, Commissioner of New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets.
Could you tell us about the hemp research program in New York State?
Sure. This started a few years ago, you know, after the previous farm bill, which kind of opened the door just a little bit for industrial hemp projects. And I remember that first year we were authorized, I think, to have up to 10 research projects in the state.
Okay.
Had to be attached to a research institution. In our case, it was Cornell University and right. SUNY Morrisville, one of our ag schools and part of our land grant system.
Okay.
And I think we had maybe 60 acres that first year, and there was a lot of interest, more curiosity at that point.
Okay.
The following year, the governor said, let's take that cap off. We opened up the cap, and as far as the number of growers who could participate, we held a pretty successful summit to kind of get people interested in understanding a little more of the subject. We got a DEA license permit for the department so that we could purchase seed for our participants.
Okay.
And I think we got up to that year close to 2,000 acres that we planted in the state.
Oh, wow.
It was a pretty large research trial. And again, depending largely on SUNY Morrisville and Cornell, excellent people there doing great work.
Right.
Then in 2018, we continued to build on that. I think last year we had probably 150 applicants for a license from us. We had somewhere around 3,500 acres planted across the state, literally from Lake Erie out to Long Island Sound.
Oh, wow.
And tremendous amount of energy, interest. And then, of course, that brings us to where we are today, which is, you know, we have a new farm bill that unlocks the door a little bit more.
Sure.
And has spurned a great deal of interest and excitement. And I think we're, you know, we in our application process here in December, I think we had over somewhere around 350 applicants interested in getting a license from us to get involved with industrial hemp in New York State. So a lot of energy, a lot of excitement.
Right.
And I think great to see an option for our agricultural community.
Sure. So walk me through the permitting process. What do the farmers need to do in order to secure the permit?
They need to fill out an application. We need to know, and this kind of goes back to the past farm bill and what kind of things were required, where the farm is, how many acres, where the acres are located, who the principals are, purpose of their trial planting, and goals and that sort of thing. It's not a terrible application, but we're largely following the guidelines we had in front of us through the previous farm bill.
Right.
And there's an application fee.
What was the fee, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm thinking it was like $500.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that. You'll
sure.
give the exact number. I'm pretty sure it's in that.
Okay.
And to stop, people that were only casually interested, not serious, from applying. And it's just a one-time thing.
Okay. And then they would need to renew every year?
They don't need to pay again, but they do need to, if there's any changes in their application, they're going to add acres or do some different things, they would need to update that application.
I see.
Of course, now we have, a different farm bill. We don't know exactly what the guidelines and regulations are going to look like. So until, that happens, and of course with the shutdown, there was, not much activity there. My understanding is that they'll work on the guidelines, regulations. We will, make sure that what we have done fits that and is tailored to that, and then we will submit that to USDA and go forward. I do expect things will be somewhat different. We know that, and moving seed around, for example, and in between states, et cetera, there should be a lot less of a headache in
right.
getting
it was a little
involved
tricky
in this
there.
Business.
New York State has grant programs for hemp farmers. Who can participate in that, and what are the requirements for getting involved in the grant program?
Sure. Well, the governor is very excited about this crop. So in that second year there when we ramped it up, I should say last year when we ramped it up more accurately, we had a summit and the governor announced an investment statewide of about $10 million into hemp. So half of that was to go to research. A lion's share of that went to, again, our college partners. Our research institutions to ramp up their capacity and acres and start learning, doing some trials, et cetera. But the other half of that was dedicated to processing and investment in processors to relocate here.
Right.
We want to make sure that, number one, we learn how to deal with this crop in New York State's soils and climate. But we also want to make sure that we're developing a customer for the crop that we're growing.
Right.
And so that has attracted a lot of interest. That particular responsibility does not rest with our Department of Agriculture, but with our investment arm, Empire State Development in New York State.
Okay.
And so applications go there. So it's kind of a two-pronged effort to, one, build the research, and secondly, to look at investing in processing capacity. Here's a case where if there were processors in the state, if they wanted to add a different line, add a different process to their already existing infrastructure, they could get loans and grants to expand and invest in their own businesses. And if there were businesses from out of state that were looking to relocate here, that would help encourage them to do that. And in this way, these last couple of years, we've really seen New York State's activity in the kind of the industrial hemp world, push us up into, I would say, probably the top five states in the country that are making some serious progress.
Right. I saw the news a couple of weeks ago about Canopy Growth Corporation's hemp industrial park. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came together?
Only a little bit. I think, You know, they're a company that is based in Canada. They are in the business. You know, and most of the rest of the world has been, you know, actively pursuing growing of hemp, industrial hemp, for some time. It's kind of new to us. We have a lot to catch up on, but they're a company that came to us and saw the aggressive nature that New York had about this crop and the desire to normalize it and have it be, you know, a good opportunity for our agricultural producers. And I think they looked at our marketplace and proximity to it, and were very excited to talk to us more. And they took a look. They're exciting about locating in our southern tier and putting in a facility and subscribing to some large acres. Their focus is going to be on the cannabinoids, which is probably where the higher value part of the industrial hemp business is, and obviously a greater bit of excitement about you know, some of the health benefits of cannabinoids, some of the pharmaceutical possibilities there. I think that's what their eye is on. So they've had a history of investing in this crop in a big way, and they liked what we were doing here and liked what they saw in New York's program. So that's certainly added another specter of excitement around the state amongst our grower community, as you can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm down here in Pennsylvania. So I'm curious, you know, what the interstate market will look like. Do you think you'll see Pennsylvania farmers hauling their bales of hemp up to New York State?
Boy, I don't know. I think we've got, you know, we're going to walk before we start running, although they're interested in walking pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to kind of, you know, we're going to kind of grow into this because there's a great deal of sophistication about the how you handle the seed product, how you extract the oils, and what quality the oil actually has. There's a very real interest in standards. I remember, you know, 2 years ago when we first had our first summit in New York, one of the things that we did at the department was put together a industrial hemp working group, which included our research partners at the university, included growers, and included processors, and it was a pretty well thought out but fairly open group of professionals who had some experience with industrial hemp. And within an hour of that meeting, I realized we needed to set up a second separate work group just devoted to the subject of CBD,
right?
Because it's a case where the industries around the country and around the world are growing so fast. They're getting ahead of what the Farm Bill certainly permitted and what was known about the crop. And we still have some of that going on. There's incredibly bright minds there, an incredible level of interest, excitement, and knowledge. But we still have to catch up as a country.
Right.
Certainly, in a big way, the Farm Bill will help that. But you know, when you start talking about daily recommended allowances and nutrition and you know, rates that are appropriate
FDA
for
right
topical and human consumption, FDA has been very silent about this. And, you know, it's going to fall on Department of Health and some of the FDA guidelines to really, you know, be clear about what's good for you, what isn't, what's too much, what's not enough.
Right.
We start adding it to food. Those are areas that we still have much to learn about.
Right. It's a brave new world. All right. So there's, you know, there seems to be a lot of negative stories about agriculture with, you know, the dairy markets and trade war with China, spotted lanternfly. Do you see industrial hemp as a source of hope for farmers?
You know, I don't think it's the panacea, but I think it's certainly an option. I think growers will need to come in with their eyes open. They'll need to look at the marketplace. Mm-hmm. They'll need to look at their own skill set and educate themselves. But certainly, you're absolutely correct. There's a number of concerns out there in the world of agriculture. It's whether it's climate related or market related or world trade related.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of things to keep your eye on and be concerned about. I think New York's probably in as good a place as anyone, only because we have, you know, pretty good resources here. We've got good land, good growers, access to water, and also access to a pretty special marketplace.
Right.
Still, we're vulnerable to the trade things that the whole country is engaged in right now and those concerns. And the market fluctuations affect us. But I think if you can add another option on the table and give the grower community an opportunity to evaluate that and, you know, have one other option, maybe add an additional crop to their mix of crops on the farm,
right.
You know, possibly offer a transition, then I think it's very positive, and that's why we're kind of excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think farmers can be doing now to prepare themselves? Do you have advice for farmers?
Yeah, I do. You know, first you need to educate yourselves. I mean, we've got a couple years of good information. We've had two research forums that we've held where grower community come in and sit down with all the researchers and look at what we've learned about, you know, nutrient management and plant density and varieties, you know, water needs. You know, you can get into the nuts and bolts of actually growing and producing this crop. They need to avail themselves of every opportunity they can to learn about how to do that. You know, we've got hundreds of years, literally, of understanding how to grow corn, how to grow alfalfa, how to grow, you know. And we've, you know, kind of purposely closed our minds to industrial hemp for, you know, many, many years. We've got to relearn some. And we got to get ourselves up to speed if we're going to be successful at it. So I think my first advice to growers is poke it with a stick, take advantage of what we've learned over the last couple of years. I think the world of Dr. Larry Smart, Al and his team, and the folks at SUNY Morrisville who have kind of led the way. They've been outstanding research. Avail yourselves of that information and, you know, evaluate it and see if it fits your crop mix. Do you have the equipment? Do you have the right kind of soils? Do you have the right level of management on your farm to take on a different crop? You know, do that before you jump in.
How is New York State set up for harvesting equipment?
The growers that, you know, already have some grain holding and some, you know, combines, things like that, probably have an advantage here, although the equipment, you know, needs some modification to handle industrial hemp. It can be challenging.
Right.
Again, that gets into some of the cultural aspects of it. Are you producing it for, say, producing it for fiber? What variety are you using? Are you using, you know, taller, you know, some of these varieties can get, you know,
really
12,
tall.
15 feet tall very quickly and quite coarse. And specialized equipment is required. So it's hard to just paint that with one brush, but I think a number of growers discovered that it was very difficult on their combine.
Yeah.
Needed to make some modifications there, and we're going to continue to learn in that front. But, you know, in other parts of the world, they are using some equipment they've designed specifically for industrial hemp. You know, our growers are pretty sharp. Pretty quick to, you know, get online and Google and go visit and see how things are happening elsewhere. And I think that learning curve is unquestionably a curve, but I don't think it's too challenging for our growing community.
All right. How can farmers avoid getting the short end of the stick? You know, it seems sometimes that happens to farmers. I don't understand why, but...
Say that again?
It seems like sometimes in the marketplace, farmers can get taken advantage of. They sort of get the short end of the stick when it comes to certain things. How can farmers avoid that?
Well, you know, in fact, and normally the things happen when there isn't a known market. There isn't a consumer already in line for the crop. And when crops, any kind of crop, doesn't have a home, you know, you're subject to the ebbs and flows of the marketplace.
Sure.
If, you know, we saw this happen, you know, over the years when I remember there was a big interest in sweet corn as a result of, you know, even, for example, if you remember the tobacco changes, and a lot of growers got out of tobacco. And yep. I remember, just 20 years ago, a lot of growers in other states jumping into sweet corn because that looked like a good place to be. Hmm. And of course, suddenly there's too much sweet corn, it's the wrong time of year, it floods the market, the prices tank for everyone. And growers would feel like they got taken advantage of there. But I think where relationships are built, and this is going to be a key point as we go forward here, I can't stress this enough, but as we get processing capacity in the state, whether it's Canopy or whoever it is, to have that relationship with the grower, to know going into it, what variety, what techniques, and what stage of development they want the crop harvested and handled, et cetera, mm-hmm. those kinds of things, then I think it works for everybody, because then the processor, the ultimate consumer, they know what to expect, what they want. The grower knows how to deliver that. It's where isn't that communication. And maybe it's not quite the quality that was desired, or the variety that was desired, or the timing that was desired, or anything else. And that's when you get growers feeling like they got the short end of a stick. But right. I think where there are relationships built and everybody has their eyes open going into it, and assuming we have a decent weather season right. we can deliver, then things work out pretty well. Okay. And witness the success of our, the long-term success, generally speaking, with, there are market fluctuations, unquestionably, but that's why we have a pretty strong agricultural community in the state, because we've got some farms that have been around for a while and, know how to talk to their customer, know how to produce the crop, and know what the demand is, and know how many acres right. are needed and accomplish that. So, you tie in the infrastructure that we have in the state, good growers, community, good land, good resources. Mm-hmm. You throw in, the best land grant system for ag education probably in the country. And now we have an unknown here. Who's the customer? What do they exactly want? It's a new crop for me. We need to work together, make sure we stay on the same page there. But I think hopefully the short end of the stick isn't something that we find ourselves looking at. And again, go into it educated, go into it understanding the risk and benefits, and having made a good analysis of it, we'll be okay.
Good. Do you think the marijuana stigma matters?
A little bit, because we've been speaking primarily about educating our growers and about learning what the marketplace is interested in worldwide. But, you make an excellent point, because our customers, our consumers, the vast majority of people that are walking around the street haven't had the benefits that you and I have had of kind of poking this subject.
Right.
They know what they, little snippets on the news, but in their mind, in many people's minds, industrial hemp and marijuana are linked. They're in the same family of plants.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of cloud over their head. So I think, you point up the need for a lot of education in the world as a whole right. about what exactly we're doing here with this crop. That, in fact, there's some significant differences. And there's a learning curve that our customer has to understand. They have not had the benefit of a few years of research trials to really educate themselves. So there is a learning curve there for the world.
Right.
It's been, that's got a little bit of a marijuana hangover, if you'll forgive the pun there, that has clouded over it. And
right.
we need to make that clear and have people understand it so that they can make good health decisions.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons I'm doing this podcast, is to help educate, our readership of farmers.
Sure. Sure. I get calls from, I'm a farmer as well, and a lot of my neighbors will call me up. Really just 101 fundamental. What the heck is industrial hemp? And should I be doing this? And,
right.
They're really, these are good growers. They've been raising forage crops and corn and soybeans, et cetera. And
sure.
Here's this completely different idea, which in the back of their heads still seems not right. Yeah. Still seems illegal. And,
right.
So there's a learning curve, no question about it.
Okay, so I've got one more question for you. So at what point did you personally know that hemp was the right way to go for ag in your state?
I think that, you know, for us, I looked at the worldwide scene. I looked at what other countries had been doing for a long time. And I looked back historically as a nation and what we had done, you know, years ago when we had a, you know, almost parallel with the hops industry. We had a very vibrant hops industry. We had a very vibrant hemp industry. Mm-hmm. It was largely for rope and materials like that.
Yep.
And then it was gone. You know, we just stopped that. But the world kept going. And I looked at how much we were buying in the United States from other countries. And I know, I think I looked up and it seems to me just from Canada, we were importing somewhere around $750 million to $800 million a year with the hemp raw materials and product.
Right.
And I looked at that and I thought, you know, here's, you know, fluctuations in weather and serious fluctuations in reliability of trade partners, concerns about market fluctuations. I know here's an option. You know, we know that the United States is already buying this product. Well, why don't we buy it from ourselves?
Yeah, imagine that.
Instead of importing it. And I think to the governor's credit, he saw this very quickly. He's first and foremost an investor. Here's an opportunity. And generally, the rest of the world is, the rest of the United States is not really up to speed on. How do we get ourselves up to speed on this so we can potentially take full advantage of it?
Right.
And again, for me, I think the big thing is that, you know, here's, I'm not sure it's the right crop for every single farmer in New York State. But I think for farmers that are saying, you know, we need to look at doing something different on our farm. We've seen several years of challenges with a certain crop or a certain method of doing it, and let's think differently here. You know, there's an old saying in agriculture about doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result next year. Change, you know, it's difficult for a lot of people to accept, but I think for agriculture, it's important for us to not only tolerate change, but actually look for opportunities to change if we're going to keep agriculture viable for the next generation. So I think here's an option. It looks very interesting. I think it holds a great deal of promise. So, you know, for those reasons, it was like, well, let's understand this and let's help get us up to speed so that our farmers can make an informed and good decision.
Excellent. Well, Commissioner Richard Ball, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You asked great questions, Eric, and good luck with it all. And feel free to reach out anytime.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. Well, I appreciate you all listening to today's show. Change is in the air, and we need to embrace it. So, hey, if you have something to talk about hemp-related in Pennsylvania or anywhere in the world, drop me a line. podcast@lancasterfarming.com. I'm Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. And until next week, see you in the newspaper. Oh, and hey, special shout out and big thank you to the Beatles.